Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Radlib for short. Radical Liberation is my channel. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks for coming in. Yeah. Just to let people know, it is Monday the 4th of May in the year of our Lord 2026.
And it's been about 4 years since I was in England. So it's
really
good to be back. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I once saw you.
You're recalling that you'd met me when I was here last.
Yeah, time. You spoke at a Witten or Shieldings once.
That's right.
You was the only person to get a standing ovation, I remember.
Yep. Yeah, I was kind of amazed.
Remarkable. No, it was great. It was a really, really interesting talk. It was arguably, I would say, the best talk. So, if people who might not have heard of you, you're sort of one of the more eminent people on like the dissident right.
I've just been around, I think, is part of it. Right.
Tell us about a bit of your background, who you are, if people might not have ever heard of you.
Yeah, so I got interested in political matters 30 years ago or something like that. A friend got me interested in libertarian ideas. And then I just kind of kept digging from there, reading history, reading political philosophy, legal philosophy, I mean, all kinds of stuff, right? And then eventually, and I was writing articles back then, but then I had 8 children. That's the thing everybody needs to know about me.
8.
8. Yes, sir.
You didn't pronounce like the...
Ocho.
It's 8. It's 8.
I was just in Italy. Ocho. 8.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So we had 8 children, so I kind of dropped out for a while. So I feel like my political life has had 2 phases, you know. One I was writing, basically,
right.
20 years ago or whatever. And then I came back. You know, the children got to the point where they weren't all babies. And I started to think about getting reengaged. And I was like, oh, YouTube's pretty interesting. I saw Carl Benjamin, for example, et cetera. And I was like, oh, there's a really interesting conversation going on there. So I started a little channel with the help of Academic Agent.
Right.
He had me on as a guest enough that people knew me. So that when I started a channel, I solved the major problem with having a YouTube channel, which is having more than 5 followers.
Right. Yeah. So getting off the ground is the hardest bit of it. Anyone out there wants to do a channel? I'm going to do a channel one day.
Right.
Yeah, good luck getting to like the first 1,000.
Exactly.
First 5,000.
I got my first 1,000 like instantly.
Right. Cool.
So I have a small channel. And I, in fact, since you're kind of the history guy, right, I should say a lot of what I do really is history at this point. It's more recent history sometimes. For example, a recent series on my channel was about the U.S. and Israel relationship, which it turns out now was very timely. Because
right.
everybody's thinking about it. But
right.
we'll get to that
okay.
later. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Cool. So, okay, what I usually do on the show is talk about the front pages in the British print media, Fleet Street. But because you're American, you're from somewhere in middle America, I understand.
Right. St. Louis, Missouri, that's right.
Okay. Go Rams. No, wait.
No, I think
Battle Hawks.
I think you're right. No, Rams sounds right.
Was it?
I'm not much into sports, but I believe it's Rams.
I think they went back to LA. Anyway. I'm only joking anyway. I barely follow American football. But Missouri. So, right in the middle of the country. So hopefully some of your opinions and takes and your knowledge of what the feeling is in America is not just the coastal elite view, but what real Americans think.
It's not the coastal elite view, that's
right.
for sure.
Okay, good. Great, interesting.
I don't represent that view.
Brilliant. So what I think is we'll whip through a little bit of the British print media.
Yeah.
But mainly I want to ask you about more Americans, Mr. Trump and his war in Iran and all sorts of things like this. Rudy Giuliani's been taken to hospital. So things like this.
I didn't hear that.
You didn't hear that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have to say, of any country in the world besides America, Britain is what I would know the most about, simply because through YouTube I have friends and I kind of keep up a little bit.
Okay.
I'm not totally coming in with nothing.
Okay.
On this.
Cool. So we'll whip through just the front pages because also as well today, it's not a fantastically interesting day. So among the headlines are no money for new weapons. That's just the British military. We underspend. In fact, most people in the world underspend on their military. The United States is an outlier in so far as that they spend tons and tons and tons of money.
Oh, yeah.
Most of the world don't.
I've seen that. And even comparisons to like a country like China, which probably people think of as like heavily militarized, American spending is like 10x. It's way more.
Yeah.
Way more per capita or however you want to measure it. Right?
Do normal Americans, or do you, are you sort of really proud by that? Worried about that? Well, like, how do
I myself am very anti-American empire and have been for decades.
Right.
But you know, it's just woven into our life. There was a place called McDonnell Douglas, now Boeing, that employs a lot of people in my field in St. Louis. And so everyone I work with, or a lot of people I work with, have worked in the defense industry.
Right. Okay.
It's just a part of everything. You know.
But you, I mean,
it's in other words, it's not so much. For most of us, it's not how we feel about it. It's just there.
Right.
You know,
there's not any real concern of, like, you know, giant black budgets, for example. We're like, what are they spending those hundreds of billions every year on?
I would say there's a general sense that there's wasteful expenditure.
Right.
There was the whole $500 hammer scandal back when I was a kid.
Yeah.
They found that the military was paying ridiculous amounts for common everyday things. When
you look over and you see countries, most other countries, but you know, somewhere like Sweden or France or Germany or United Kingdom, and we're paying very, very minimal on defence. Do you guys look at that and sort of tut with scorn, or do you just, or you're like, well, we get it. They're not super rich countries like we are.
I don't know. I can't speak for anyone else. I would just say that for myself, it seems nice. I don't want spending all this money for no purpose.
Okay.
Right.
Fair enough. Okay. So in Britain, no money for new weapons. Apparently, we won't be able to buy new weapons until the 2030s, says one of these headlines. And the cost of a pint of beer hits £10 in London.
That seems high.
Well, the thing is, look, there's some gals enjoying a brew, a bevy, £10. The thing is, I've paid way more than £10 for a pint of beer in London before, years ago. Depends where you go.
Yeah, right.
So it's not like the first time ever. Look, cost of pint hits £10 in London for the first time. No.
They might mean on average or something.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. Yeah. I remember going to some stupidly expensive place in like Hoxton or something, and they wanted like £18 for a beer years ago. Anyway, it's stupid.
You were paying for the atmosphere.
Yeah, it's stupid money. Okay, welfare pays more than work for 600,000 households.
That's true everywhere.
In the United States, there's a big debate around
live on welfare.
Right. Yeah. There is an endless debate of just why are we paying people just to scrounge off the state, essentially.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, so we'll whip through this. Zendaya there, for some reason, they've decided she's the most beautiful woman in the world. She's not. Britain told to pay £1 billion a year to EU after reset. I don't know if you watch AA stuff.
Is that up or down from, I'm confused.
What's that?
So that's more than Britain would have been paying into the EU?
Mm. Yeah, loads more.
Loads more.
Huh? Yeah, because we were when we were in the EU before the referendum,
Brexit,
we were a net contributor and paid loads and loads. And then when we came out, sort of part of the idea was that we don't pay them anything anymore.
I would think.
But we still do. And anyway, the current Labour government want us to be closer, or a reset with Europe. And part of that is Europe now asking for just another £1 billion.
So it's a soft on Brexit.
Yeah.
But there's been a lot of that.
Yeah.
Of kind of unwinding the Brexit thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And of course, people here with on Lotus Eaters and our sort of end of the spectrum hate all that, you know.
Yeah.
We were arch leavers. So any sort of reset or any sort of getting closer to Europe again is just frustrating and annoying to us. It was the opposite of what we wanted, what we voted for. The other thing is the state pensions in Britain going forward almost certainly won't be able to afford it. I won't bore you with what the triple lock means, but basically pensioners might not, well, in decades to come anyway, probably won't get as much as they thought they would. Is there much problem with state pensions in the United States? Is that a political football that comes up perennially, or is it not much of a talking point?
Normal Americans wouldn't have a state pension.
Really? Not at all?
Okay, I'm sorry. Social Security.
Okay. Yeah.
We have this thing called Social Security, and we're constantly being told that it's a pyramid scheme, it is, and it's not going to, just, you know, fiscally, it's just not going to work out.
Right.
Eventually, there's just not going to be enough young people paying into it, because the original idea was, it's like you're investing in a retirement fund and the money you put in grows and then you get it back. Well, that's not how it works at all. Mm. They just spend it all constantly and get more money out of the young workers and hand it to the old people, which is fine when the young people outnumber the old people.
Right.
But when it flips, you get the inverse triangle, population triangle, right?
Right.
Then population pyramid, then suddenly it doesn't work out so well.
So it sounds like a really similar sort of debate as here.
Shrinking populations everywhere, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're headed towards. And certainly in the West.
Yeah. And we're just not going to be able to afford it, almost certainly. Okay, so The Guardian, you may or may not be aware, is sort of one of the most left-leaning...
Yeah.
Like a horrible thing. They're saying something about AI facial recognition systems, but we're not all that interested in that this morning. The triple lock pension thing.
Yeah.
Let's just move on from it. There was a big explosion yesterday where two people died and two or three other people were wounded. But we don't... The details of it... The police called it suspicious but not a terrorist incident.
Okay.
Some sort of domestic... I don't know. It's weird, whatever that is. I guess maybe we'll find out about what really happened there in the coming days. But some sort of weird explosion happened there. It's not fantastically interesting down the front of the paper.
There we go.
Talking about parking fines, that Labour, obviously being socialists, just want to squeeze the kulaks for every last penny they possibly can.
And this will really help them in the upcoming local elections.
Right.
Stance, right?
Right. Exactly.
People are going to be really excited to vote for that.
They are going to get trounced.
Do regular folks vote in the local elections?
The turnout's usually really bad.
I was going to say.
Yeah, the turnout's usually sort of pathetically low.
Which means it's easy to win if you can just get a few more people to turn out than the other guy, right?
Yeah. Quite often. I mean, I think this time round will be a bit different because...
Why?
Simply because Labour's so unpopular that a few more people are going to turn out just to...
To vote against them.
Yeah. But often it's the way the local council, sometimes you get like an independent or you get like a local residential committee type person who's completely independent and they just happen to genuinely be a personality in their little area.
Yeah.
People know who they are and they get a few hundred votes
and that's enough
and they're a councillor. Right. That's not unheard of at all.
So why would Labour be so unpopular that you'd vote against your local guy that you know in the Labour?
Oh, well...
Local Labour guy in your town?
Yeah, well, just because Labour, since they've been in, is it 2 years? 18 months now?
Yeah.
Just nearly everything they've done seems to have been at odds with the interests of the nation and the people. They're just deeply, deeply unpopular.
Yeah.
Keir Starmer is the least popular Prime Minister of all time.
Oh, really?
Of all time. Like, going back to...
In terms of polling.
Yeah.
Right.
So... A good couple of hundred years worth of PMs.
But would this be the first time that poll unpopularity would be demonstrated at the polls, you know, in the voting?
Yeah, I mean, not the first time.
I mean, I know there's been little by-elections or whatever, right? But this would be the
first
major time where you could really see it.
Yeah. We did have that one by-election where it was supposed to be a Labour in Galton Denton. It was supposed to be a Labour safe seat, super safe seat. And Labour, I think they came third, yeah.
Wow.
It was close run between the Greens and Reform, and the Greens won it.
Right,
yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily... It's indicative, but doesn't necessarily tell you what's coming up in a week, I guess.
No, true, yeah. People always massively over-exaggerate the importance of a single by-election.
Right.
They think, oh, this pattern's going to play out across the country at the next general election or at the next local elections.
It might not.
Yes, not usually the case at all.
Having said that, you wouldn't be totally stunned if Starmer gets a bit of a slap in the face in the local elections. And Labour turns to him and says, you're screwing this up for all of us.
Right. Yeah, it's expected. Some people are saying that he's a dead man walking politically.
Yeah.
That all the polls are showing that they're going to get really badly trounced on Thursday.
Yeah.
Sort of an historic all-time trouncing, like lose maybe something like 75% of all their councillors, get completely wiped out. You know, maybe 1,700, 1,800, 1,900 councillors, and the vast majority of those flip straight to Reform.
The only issue is that the Starmbot will not care. Right?
Well, that's the next thing. When that happens, I think that's baked in now. That's sort of certainly going to happen.
Right.
The next we'll talk about is what happens then. Will Starmer actually get stabbed in the back or the front by his own people?
Right.
And we get a new prime minister.
Or does he just march robotically on?
Yeah. If it was up to him, he will do that, of course.
Yeah.
It's just a question of whether there's enough big beasts in the party and enough support coalesces around the right person. But we've got the bench isn't all that deep.
In
the
Labour. There isn't an obvious heir apparent.
Right, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly that.
Right,
there are two or three people, and none of them are like particularly charismatic or a brilliant mind or anything at all, or got the vast
unlike
majority.
Unlike Starmer, who is brilliant and charismatic, right. Is what you were saying.
Right. sometimes someone doesn't have to be brilliant and charismatic. Look at Gordon Brown, who took over from Tony Blair. But what Gordon Brown did have was just a giant, giant support of the parliamentary party and the membership of the party. So mm-hmm. when Tony Blair finally stepped down, he was quote-unquote coronated in. Yes. He really was just the designated heir apparent, and there was no question. No one tried to challenge.
Yeah, but he really had the support within the party,
yeah.
and that allowed him to govern.
Right. Yeah. Whereas now there isn't a single person like that.
Yeah. They could put someone up there, but the party might just be fractured afterwards.
Yeah. Right. Perhaps the front runner. I think the bookies at the moment are saying the front runner is a woman called Angela Rayner.
I've heard that.
But there's a big chunk of people within at least the parliamentary Labour Party that... talking about anyone but Rayner, so you get the it's a fractured thing.
Yeah.
But okay, back to the papers. In the Mirror, this is pure slop now. This is the tabloids.
You even do the tabloids on Breakfast with Beau.
Yeah, just a quick look anyway.
Broad-minded.
So the old Manchester United football coach was taken ill, so that's big news. There you go.
Now, what does this mean? Reform and new race row.
Race row, yeah. So that's Aaron Banks, who's been a big friend of Nigel for years, like all through the Brexit and the UKIP years.
Okay,
and all that
so
sort
this
of thing.
Is the game where they...
He's a rich man. He gives him millions of pounds from time to time.
Not trying to be pro-reform or anything, but just anti the other people. This is the thing where they are wanting to tear you down, and so they find something you said once years ago or whatever,
yeah.
and then make a big deal out of it.
Yeah. I mean, this one is...
One of those kinds of things.
Exactly. Yeah. This is one of those things where it's not even that long ago. Aaron Banks said something which I think is completely reasonable and normal, but some people think it's racist.
Yeah.
And so it makes the front page of the Mirror. Yeah, he said something. So Reform put, the story is real quick, say, Reform put forward some candidate or other who's black in Wales. Mm-hmm. Oh no, Plaid Cymru, the Welsh, probably mispronouncing that, sorry. The Welsh Nationalist Party, although they're not nationalists, but anyway, they put forward some black candidate. And Aaron Banks said, Welsh lad? ?
That was it?
Yeah. And now there's a new race row.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, you can't be black and Welsh. You just can't. You can have a bit of paper saying that you're Welsh, but you're not actually Welsh, are you?
Right.
Because of, you know, reality. Heritage, I mean, and...
Just with the headline, you would think like he used the N-word or something.
Oh no.
He just said Welsh.
Yeah.
That's it?
Welsh lad, is he? You know, and so that's a race row now.
That's sad.
Reformer embroiled in a brand new race row because Aaron Banks noticed reality. All right. The Financial Times, not much on there really. Well, there are interesting things, but I think we should move on. They saw pure slop again there. Alex Ferguson. He's in his 80s, I believe.
Yeah,
so you might not have ever heard of him, but he was one of the most successful football managers of all time, basically. Won the Champions League and things.
We have a friend who talks about football managers, so yeah. I've heard the name. Yeah. Academic agent.
Oh, right, yeah. AA likes football a bit, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah.
I've heard him talk about 90s
back
football.
Then.
Yeah, 90s football.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same. When I was young, when I was a kid, a teenager in my 20s, football was massive. It was like my whole life. I just loved football. But into my 30s and now 40s, I don't really pay all that much attention. But back in the 90s, Man United, in the 1990s, I won't talk about this much because my audience are not really into sports ball.
Yeah.
But anyway, just to say, this chap here won the Champions League and loads of Premier League titles with Manchester United in the 1990s. And now he's really old and was taken to hospital yesterday.
So I'm sorry, just asking about the audience here, Beau.
Yeah.
So how do you know they're not into it?
We ask them.
If you talk more than 30 to 60 seconds, they tell you to shut up.
They start doing yawning emojis.
Yeah, right.
They move on. No, we did a poll one time, and I said, we do a poll every day, and a couple of times I've said, do you care about football at all? Like, and they're like, no. Like, do you care about any, like, slop celebrity news? No. Do you care about Formula One? No. Boxing? No. Yeah. They don't... They're not interested in that. It's fair enough.
Gives your show focus.
It's fair enough. Yeah, right. Yeah. Let's keep it as serious as possible. Yeah. So we'll move on from The Sun that has got a story about how people that make footballs for the World Cup only get like £26 a week because it's like some sort of sweatshop type thing. And FIFA make millions out of it. So, okay. They're the nonsense front pages today. Let's talk about things that are a bit more serious. On this show, I quite often look at the price of oil.
Mm.
So real quick, just check in with that. It's down from the last few days, but still kind of high. So West Texas is just over $100 a barrel, and Brent is at $107 a barrel. So, you know, expensive.
The trick is to look at the 6 month or the year, and see how it looks. Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, let's do that. There you go. So volatile is the word. I mean,
what period is that?
That's a year.
That's a year.
Yeah.
Oh, it doesn't seem up.
That's
really
3 months.
It's. I thought it would be more up because of the war.
Yeah.
It looks like it's about what it was a year ago.
Well, it's higher, but it's not fantastically higher. I say that every morning, not every morning, but so when the war started, it was roughly about $78, $79 a barrel. And now it's like, what, 100 or 107, in and around that ballpark. So a lot more, what, 15, 20% more. But
yeah, but you look at the year view and it's about what it was a year ago, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So the thing is, though, isn't it? That doesn't translate into how much people actually pay at a petrol station to fill up their car.
It does have an impact on it, right?
Oh no, I'm saying, yeah, of course it has an impact on it, but you pay more at the petrol pump than what crude has gone up. Yeah. Way more, right? So
Oh, I see. It has an outsized effect.
Yes.
If crude goes up 20%, price of the pump goes up 30%.
Right, yeah. Or way more.
Or even
yeah,
more.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Is gas expensive in the United States at the moment?
It's a little bit more. I mean, I feel it because we have a big family, and so we have bigger cars
that
are not fuel efficient.
Right.
Right. So, yeah. So instead of filling up for $50, I've been filling up for like $80.
Right.
So that's not fun.
Yeah, right.
But it's not apocalyptic,
right,
if you follow me. Right.
That's sort of the angle I take.
Some people talk like, you know, the world is coming down around their ears. It's like, not yet.
That's the angle I've been saying a lot on this, is that it's more, but it's not sort of apocalyptic more. Yeah. Having said that, though, it's all relative, isn't it? If you can afford it, an extra $30 doesn't mean a great deal to you, okay. But for some people, a lot of people, $30 is a be-all and end-all.
Yeah.
That means things don't add up anymore and I can't eat now.
Yeah, yeah.
For, you know, so
right. They're really pinched.
Yeah. So I've got a lot of sympathy for, obviously, of course, for people like that, where they're already on the breadline.
Right.
And now you have to pay extra $30 every few days. It's like, oh, right, that's all my money.
Yeah, that's it.
That's all my money now.
Right.
So, yeah, worrying. Okay, let's have we got a poll, Harry. We did a poll?
We did, yeah.
Okay, if you bring it up, we'll do that now. Let's have a quick look at what we asked. Oh, we asked, do you like Rudy Giuliani? And I see one or two people in the chat saying, who's Rudy Giuliani? So we'll get into that in a moment. But just to say, the poll says 40% said yes, 30% said no, and 31% said a little bit. So if we add the little bit to yes, to be generous, that's sort of 70% of people liked him to some degree.
On the positive side.
And 30%
more or less
didn't. Yeah, yeah. So for one or two people who might not have ever heard of him, he's America's mayor, isn't he?
Yeah. I lived in New York briefly before he was mayor.
Right.
If I'm remembering correctly. And it was a bit rough. And he evidently did a good job of cleaning it up. Or that's the reputation. I'm not deeply into New York politics.
And he was mayor during 9/11, wasn't he?
That's the reason he would be famous about it. Yeah.
So there you go.
Is anyone involved with 9/11 in terms of the firemen and the policemen and, you know, because so many died in the towers and stuff? There's a certain civil religion sacredness around those people, and I guess he got a bit of that himself.
Yeah. So a bit of his story was that before he was mayor, he was like a prosecutor and he was fairly fearlessly went after the mafia.
That's true.
In New York, because all through, obviously, going back to the 50s and 60s and 70s, New York crime families, but even into the 80s, it was still there, like John Gotti and John Gotti Jr. and stuff. There was still mafia in New York, and he went after them fairly fearlessly. And so people liked him for that. And as you say, cleaned it up. There's just New York in the 80s and even 90s was a lot more rough than it is now, although it's getting worse now. But and so people liked him for doing that, being tough on crime, basically.
Yeah. Law and order team and his career, both as a prosecutor and then as a mayor.
And then went on to be mayor through 9/11. And then also in the Trump, when Trump lost to Biden, in inverted commas, in 2020, Trump brought him in to try and get to the bottom of things and try and prosecute and try and investigate all the all the shenanigans.
I don't really know where any of that went.
That may or may
kind of died with a whimper. Yeah.
But now he's old. Now he's like 81. Mm. And last year, apparently, he was in a car crash, quite a bad car crash.
Oh.
I mean, look, he's wearing some sort of like back brace thing there.
Oh, my goodness.
And like, it was quite a bad car crash. And when you're in your 80s, that's going to be no joke.
Yeah.
And so now, like over the weekend, yesterday or something, he was taken to hospital with an undiagnosed illness. And people, even Trump, are just saying sort of, I'm paraphrasing, but like, pray for Rudy. So he might be, they might discharge him later today, or he might be really, really dying. We don't know. But
okay.
He was rushed to hospital. So, okay, that's in the news today. Just thought I'd, since we've got an American here, I thought we'd just throw that one in for the poll.
That, so thank you.
But there. Okay. So let's have a quick look. Let's talk about Trump and Iran and the Straits of Hormuz and all that sort of thing. So first of all then, what's your thoughts and feelings and people that you know and speak to in the United States? IRL, how do you feel about Trump and the war in Iran and everything?
Well, it's an extraordinary moment for me because I've been, as I mentioned, opposed to the U.S. empire, opposed to the neocons for a long time. I predicted 9/11. Did you know that?
Did you?
I did, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, the day it was happening, one of my coworkers said, you said something like this was going to happen.
You and Tom Clancy.
Did he?
Well, kind of.
Okay.
He wrote a story where an airplane was flown into the Capitol building.
Yeah, no, it wasn't anything like that.
Okay.
It was more just that I could feel that something was coming and an attack was coming, and a friend reminded me of that. I'm glad he did. I might not have remembered I said it. So I foresaw 9/11, and so I had a very different reaction afterwards because I had a sense of why it had happened. It had to do with the U.S. empire and the neocons and what they were doing abroad and just horrible things they were doing and backlash to that. And so I had a very different view. So I was not excited about going into Iraq in 2003.
Right.
I was opposed to it.
Okay.
And this was very tense with my family, who were totally caught up in the sort of frenzied patriotism of the day.
Okay.
You know, you know, my family of origin. So, you know, I'm used to being this outlier, the radical outlier, whereas right now, the ones who are aligned are like me and the normal guy. Right. So we have a daughter who works at a restaurant. The guys in the back of the house, the cooks and so forth, right? They're all like, oh yeah, Israel controls U.S. foreign policy. This is the normal man on the street view at this point.
Okay.
So that is what I thought of as like edgy, like, I wonder if I'll get fired for this opinion. Like, everyone says this now.
Right.
So
okay.
I don't have to be particularly brave to have the views that I've had all these decades anymore, because I'm aligned with the man on the street at this point.
And that surely is a shift in the, I hesitate to say the Overton window, but a shift in public perception. Because as you say, back in 2003, 2003, that would have been much less so, wouldn't it?
I was very alone back then.
Right.
Yeah, I had a lot of static from people at church, people in my family, you know, that is conservative, socially, theologically conservative type people around me were all on board for what the U.S. empire was doing.
Because you're Christian, to make that clear, if anyone doesn't know.
Yeah, my father was a pastor, so very involved with the church. So I was really an outlier back then and felt it. And my wife remembers this, you know, some of the hostile comments we got. Whereas now I'm not an outlier. Now I'm normal. And the people who are all for this are the ones who are kind of weird. You know?
Right. Okay. Because, well, I suppose if I ask you a question about...
Good for me.
Finally.
Yeah.
Finally.
Only took 25 years.
Vindication, yeah. But so, like, specifically, though, then, the MAGA movement and Donald Trump himself, the people you know, people you talk to, has that sort of waned? I feel like after the Epstein stuff and some of the other things Trump has done, and especially this war, that... The real hardline MAGA people, do they seem on the wane? Or do you hear many voices of people saying, I used to like Trump a lot more than I do now, or not?
Okay, a couple comments on this. So first of all, you know, personnel is policy, right? So one way to look at it is, well, it's Trump, and whatever he does is MAGA, right? Another way to look at it is, there were all these people who were never Trumpers, who were very, very opposed to Trump in 2016 and so forth, right?
Sure.
He's now surrounded by them, right? And the people who had been his big supporters who really took the hits for being pro-Trump when that was considered quite controversial. They're out. You know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, people like this. They're kicked out, and they're at war. So Trump,
for example, wasn't Marco Rubio a never Trumper to begin with?
Right.
Okay.
So many others, right?
I see what you're saying. Okay.
So Trump is still there. If you only look at Trump, you see a continuity. But if you look at who's around him, you see this massive shift. Right. And a lot of people have noticed this.
Right.
So, again, drawing from my daughter's work, Man on the Street View, the boss there, he had been very MAGA and Trump. And then just within the last month, he said, I'm out.
Right.
It's over.
Just within the last month.
I hate him. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say that the genocide in Gaza had some people shifting over that Trump continued to support that. But really, this attack on Iran has been a turning point.
Just say that.
So many people were like, again. You know, I mean, we had the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Remember the withdrawal from Afghanistan, just humiliating.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, and now. And Trump had said, we're not going to do that under me. Mm. And now here we go.
Yeah, now here we are.
And people are like, come on.
Just to say real quick, just to you mentioned that the genocide in Gaza, just to say, to characterize it that way, you're not pro-Israel and Netanyahu.
Right. So, yeah, I grew up in a Christian Zionist church. My father was a missionary to the Jews. That was why he came to St. Louis originally. Over time, that became very aligned with Israel and stuff. But myself, being influenced by libertarian ideas and various other things, I moved away from that many decades ago.
You reject that very, very heavily.
Yeah, now I'm anti-Zionist number one.
Right. There you go. Based. Okay, yeah. So, I mean, all right. So, yeah, with this war, the never... forever war guy, that whole angle.
Sorry, quick comment about,
sure,
Americans have generally been anti-empire and anti-war whenever they were given an opportunity to indicate it. This is not well remembered, but Woodrow Wilson, FDR, they both ran on anti-war platforms and then got the U.S. into World War I, World War II respectively. Mm-hmm. Anyway, right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, this keeps happening,
right?
They rhetorically say what Americans want to hear, which at least tells you where Americans are. Americans do want to hear that, right? And then they get into office and they do the bidding of the military-industrial complex or Israel or whatever you want to think it is. Mm. But somehow, some way, for a century now, Americans vote against war and we get war anyway.
Yeah. There's the old thing, I think it was John Quincy Adams, not John Adams, John Quincy Adams said, America shouldn't go...
Abroad seeking monsters to destroy.
That's right.
We all know that quote.
We don't want to fight in European wars, for or against European wars and all that sort of thing.
Stay out of it.
But
just think about it practically. The United States is massive.
Mm.
Just massive. Mm. Massive natural resources. We literally don't need to be involved.
Mm. Yeah.
Just practically speaking... the United States could just be the United States and not have troops all over the world and bases all over the world, and we'd be fine. Mm. So we're not doing it because the American people need it.
Mm. Yeah.
It's other reasons. Right?
If you look at Woodrow Wilson in 1917 and World War I, that's something different. Let's not go down that rabbit hole. But when we look at FDR and World War II, I'm no fan of FDR. I think a lot of people, I imagine you're not.
No.
however, when you look at it in detail... I feel like it would have been almost impossible for the United States to stay. I mean, look at Pearl Harbor. It would have been very, very difficult for them to stay out at a certain point.
Another way to put it...
Not that I want to play defense on behalf of FDR, but...
The way I would put it is that the largest anti-war movement of all time was the America First movement, opposed to entry into World War II. And it took Pearl Harbor
to
get Americans to support it.
Right.
And as we now know... the book called Day of Deceit by Dennett documented that FDR knew that attack was coming, let it happen because he needed something like that to get into the war.
Yeah, maybe. I feel like some of that history is a little shaky. I mean, I know for a fact that the British were aware that something was afoot, whether it was actually that giant Japanese armada specifically at Pearl think a lot of people thought maybe something would happen at Midway, but not. But anyway, let's not get into the
just
the
real
weeds
quick note on
that.
Real quick note on that. Dennett's book, Day of Deceit. He's actually pro FDR,
right?
And he says, yeah, FDR knew. And the reason he's pro, how does he justify being pro FDR with that? Is he says, well, the U.S. needed to be pushed into the war, and so it was okay for him to do that deceitful thing.
Yeah.
So that is, this is a fan of FDR looking at the evidence and saying, yeah, he knew.
Yeah. Well, I did a long form piece of content on my history themed show, Epochs. It's behind the paywall. Consider joining for as little as £5 a month for a tier membership. On there, I did a very, very long form bit of content, and I just called it The Road to Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
And it was talking about Japan from the 19th century through to December 7th, 1941, how they got there. And there was a fair bit of intelligence flying around.
Yeah.
I'm still not entirely, and I know all the arguments, I'm just not entirely convinced FDR knew that exactly that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But they knew something was afoot.
He wanted something like that.
Yeah.
He was trying to provoke Germany, and they wouldn't do it. And so it's called the back door to war. So he used Japan to get into the war.
Well, you get a casus belli, you've now got a reason for war. But
that's right.
I think what actually happened on that morning at Pearl Harbor in December 41, the scale of it was a real shock, a genuine shock to him, though.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't realize that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway. Yeah,
I hear you.
Let's move on from that. So back to Trump and the Straits of Hormuz. So the latest thing is he's saying there, well, as you can see the headline there, Trump says US military will guide stranded ships out of Straits of Hormuz. Because if anyone who might not know,
they've been stuck there the whole time.
In the Persian Gulf. Yeah. Hundreds, I think maybe thousands of ships
have just been
sitting there. And some of the crews haven't been able to leave their ships for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Right, yeah.
So it's like a little bit of some of the conditions on board must be terrible. But
right.
So now he's saying, that's the latest thing in this news cycle, that the US Navy will, and Air Force, will escort them out, calling it Project Freedom.
Oh, jeez.
I mean,
sorry, just Project Freedom, just the branding. It's just ridiculous.
You think it's corny or cheesy?
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So, what's your as a Yankee?
Yeah.
What's your thoughts and feelings on that bit of news?
I'm more of a Southerner, but
anyway. Oh, okay.
Question I would have is, you know, what do you think of Trump's track record of doing the things that he says in regards to this conflict? Because to me, it seems like he says something and then, you know, he says in 3 days, this will happen. And then 3 days pass and he says in 2 days, this will happen. You know,
yeah.
It just seems like it's been that for months.
Yeah.
He just says stuff, but it doesn't result in action that aligns with what he says.
I think that's fair.
Pattern I see. I wouldn't put much weight on those words.
Okay.
Let's just wait and see. Because he says lots of things
about
this conflict, and very few of them seem to actually happen.
I agree with you. In fact, there's no real way to disagree with that take. But one thing I would say also, though, to play devil's advocate, is that he does actually also sometimes do stuff and pull the trigger on stuff that a lot of other presidents wouldn't have done. Like, for example,
the invasion, the attack on Iran itself.
Right.
That's for sure.
Right.
Yes.
No other president had the chutzpah to do that.
Right. And Netanyahu wanted this... officially put this out in a clean break in 1996. So that's 30 years ago that Netanyahu had Iran on a list.
It's been his dream, hasn't it?
And one by one, he's knocked off countries off that list, like Libya, for example. Gaddafi's Libya, right? Done regime change, Syria recently. And Iran's the last one on the list.
Right, yeah.
And they weren't wanting them to be the last one. It's just no other president would do what we now see as foolish to do, which is put yourself in a position where Iran controls the strait and has a stranglehold on world economy. And
I feel like Trump is, I think a lot of people that criticize Trump say he is sort of unpredictable and you can't really tell what he might do or say next. I think that's kind of true. I can never really tell whether when Trump says something, whether it's just bluster and saber rattling or whether in like 24 hours, some big stuff is going to go down.
Right,
you know,
that's
like, true. For example, the Maduro raid.
Mm-hmm.
That was something
weird.
Unprecedented. That's something no other president in my lifetime would have. Maybe someone like FDR or Truman might have done something like that. just said, yeah, go, try it, do it. But it, certainly in my lifetime, no president would have had the guts to sort of give that the green light.
Right.
But also true.
You make a good point. I was talking more about after the invasion of Iran, he's made a lot of statements about, you know,
that's true. Yeah,
that he's going to like control the situation, and he clearly doesn't control the situation.
I think 3, 4, maybe even 5 times he said, "I'm going to unleash hell."
Yeah.
In like 24 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he's back down from that.
Yeah, it's going to be very sad. The end of a civilization.
That
right?
is true.
Remember all that? Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely just a statement of fact to say that that has happened.
Yeah.
Now, whether one of these times he threatens that and then actually does it.
Right.
I feel like there's
evidence that he could do something extreme.
Yeah. I feel like at some point, maybe if it's the 6th, the 7th, the 12th time he threatens, will be the time when he does actually blow up all their bridges.
Right,
and
but
power
my point is, you know, the headline we just saw, I'm just going to wait and see what he does.
Right, okay.
Where with other people, if they said something, you'd be like, okay, buckle up, here we go.
Yeah.
Right now, Trump says something and you're like, eh, we'll see.
I feel like he's
Check in again in a week.
Yeah. Right, yeah. I do feel like he's playing the game just in public, if you like. This stuff might have gone on behind closed doors a lot more in the past, but Trump, just his style of government, his style of leadership, is that he'll just do a Truth Social about it. He won't just tell the State Department to warn the Iranian equivalent of their State Department, their Foreign Office. He'll just do a Truth Social about it.
Yeah.
And so everyone, the whole world, just reads that and it's like, okay, this is happening now.
Right.
But
that's
actually,
not really a government action. Always, that's just a Trump tweet.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So and so that is sort of a new way of doing it, isn't it?
Right, right.
That's a new sort of new paradigm of government.
But presidents have had times where they just have rhetoric that has nothing to do with what's happening, right?
Yeah. I mean,
that's just standard politics.
Yeah, true.
You just say stuff, meanwhile something else is happening.
Yeah, true.
It's the old, you know, look at my distraction over here while I'm really doing something over here.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe, I mean, when you look at the Venezuela Maduro stuff, and the broader question of who controls crude oil, and then you look at this Iran war thing and sort of nominally, and I believe it, at least from the Israeli point of view, it's about uranium enrichment, but actually it's much more, I would have thought, in the American mind, about oil, who controls oil and things. And then there's other stuff going on in Southeast Asia about blockades in I just feel like Trump and Greenland, the resources of Greenland, I feel like Trump or the people around Trump perhaps are just thinking much more about, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm giving them too much credit, but thinking more about decades into the future, about securing oil for themselves. Ultimately,
that's very generous of you. My own take is not so generous.
Okay.
As I said, there is a long-term plan here, but it's Netanyahu's. Okay. Look up a clean break from 1996. He gave a list of countries. They've been working their way through the list. Iran's literally the last one on the list that they haven't done a regime change on. And what is the point of the list? It has to do with Israel being completely dominant in its area.
Yeah.
Right. So it's geostrategic dominance within the Middle East. Iran is an independent power, as we can all see now, with its own arsenal, its own idea of what should be happening. And Israel doesn't like that. It wants everyone around it to be subservient to it, right?
Mm.
And they're almost there. Syria now is subservient to Israel after this Assad is out. Well, they want the same with Iran. They want it to be in chaos and civil war, or they want a Pahlavi puppet who you know, says he's the king of Iran or whatever, the Shah, but in fact is just serving Israel, right?
Yeah.
So that's what they want. That's the real reason for the war. And all the talk of oil and geostrategic stuff, I think, is a post hoc justification or rationalization.
Okay.
That's my view.
I mean, clearly
this has not been good for oil, control of oil by the U.S. Iran is controlling things, not the U.S. right now. So at least in the short term, it's not working out if that was the plan.
I completely accept everything you're saying in the Middle East. But then if you look at like the Greenland thing and the Venezuelan thing, surely that's a bit of a
talking about the oil angle on Venezuela?
Well, just in the whole world. If there are planners and strategists at the White House or the State Department or the Pentagon, and they're looking at the whole world.
Right.
And of course the Middle East is, you know, absolutely pivotal thing, and what Israel want is a pivotal thing in their minds.
Yeah.
But it's a whole world, they're playing a game globally.
Right. So there was this doctrine of full spectrum dominance. I don't know if you've heard that.
Yeah.
Right. And that is that the U.S. should be the dominant power in all regions of the world. Right. And in my view, we are seeing that unwind. I think it was true in the 90s. Effectively, the U.S. was the dominant power globally.
Well, there's the project for the new American century.
Right. This, I think, is falling apart. China is clearly an independent power that calls the shots in its sphere to a greater degree. They're very patient. Russia is clearly acting independently. Mm-hmm. Now Iran is acting independently.
Right.
It could be that the U.S. empire will have one final power mode burst or something, right? and dominate over Iran, China, and Russia. But my own take is it's going to be a long, slow crumble of global dominance. We're already on the way.
You think
the U.S.
so?
Does not call the shots with China, Russia, and Iran.
Oh, no, that's fair to say. That's absolutely fair to say. The CCP
China,
absolutely
Russia,
doesn't
Iran.
Answer
let me
to
put it, Yeah, let me put anyone. It bluntly. China, Russia, and Iran are not puppets of the U.S. government.
You know, I accept that. I believe
right?
that, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think they're going to be puppets anytime soon. That's
yeah, well... Well, we'll see about if the Iran regime crumbles or not. But
right.
No, I absolutely accept that the Kremlin and Beijing don't have to do anything that Washington says.
They follow their
absolutely.
Own path.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Now, Kremlin has to pay attention to Beijing. That's a different story. But not the U.S.
Right. Mm.
Yeah.
But whether that means U.S. hegemony over big chunks of the rest of the world... Personally, I don't see it particularly crumbling anytime soon. I mean,
one piece at a time, right?
Yeah, I mean, who knows?
One bite at a time and slowly, you know. I mean, some people thought that if there was any geostrategic significance to Venezuela, the Maduro thing, it's that somebody in Washington realizes that they are losing global dominance. And so they're thinking, well, at least our own backyard should be secured, namely right. the Americas.
Yeah.
And maybe Greenland.
Do you think that there's lots of chatter that Trump's or the US military is going to do something in Cuba next? that's next on the list as far as like the State Department and the Pentagon are concerned?
Yeah, now, I'm sorry, who is the... Rubio.
Yeah.
Rubio's Cuban, right? Am I getting him mixed
up? Well, him personally, his descent. I believe he's got... Is he? He's got something like that.
Sorry, I might be mixing him up with another figure, but there's someone who... They're all about Cuba.
Right.
And the administration. Because of their own background. Okay. Sorry, fact check me, chat, please. It's Rubio or another guy. Anyway, there's someone in the administration that is totally, everything you hear from them is about Cuba.
Right.
So they might get their way.
Okay.
Because some people who fled after Castro took over have been wanting to, you know, regime change for
ever
all that
then.
Time. And that's
right.
the 60s, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. very late 50s, I think.
I'm sorry, it was late 50s, thank you.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Like the end of Batista, I think so. So look, here's the thing. Trump, in the Washington Post, threatens retaliation. Iran threatens retaliation after Trump says US will guide ships in Strait of Hormuz, whether they will or not. Look, Trump's disapproval rating reaches a new higher, the post ABC and Ipsos poll finds, for what that's worth.
I was going to raise that. You talked about Starmer being historically unpopular. I mean, Trump's on his way. I haven't seen if compared to all presidents ever or whatever, but he's pretty unpopular right now.
Yeah, it seems to be. I think that, yeah.
Including with, as I said, with a lot of the people who were the diehard Trump supporters.
Mm.
You know, especially since the attack on Iran, they're like, okay, that's not what we wanted. That's not what we thought this was about.
For me personally, his handling of the various Epstein things that came up changed my mind quite a lot.
That's interesting.
And then this Iran thing as well. Seems to me he jumped when Israel told him to.
Yeah.
My
sense for Americans is that for the Trump supporters, the ones who are really there for Trump in his first term and everything, in the three elections, right? They were supporting him three times, right? And the Epstein thing raised question marks. And then the attack on Iran sent a lot of people over the edge.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I feel like
the Epstein thing kind of softened support up, but I don't think he had lost the support. But with the attack on Iran, people started being like, okay, I'm out.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've already got to almost 10-2. So at the end of the show, I like to do a little segment on this day in history.
Okay.
Just have a quick chat about, a quick look at things down through the centuries or even occasionally the millennia of note that happened on this day. So let's do that real quick. What happened on the 4th of May? Well, it was the Battle of Tewkesbury. I think it's only 2 weeks ago, again, on my history theme show, Behind the Paywall, Epochs, I've been doing a long, very, very long form set of series all about the English monarchy. And I was up to the Wars of the Roses, Edward IV and his little brother, Richard III, and all that sort of thing. And only 2 weeks ago, I covered the Battle of Tewkesbury there. And on this day in 1471, is in Gloucestershire. The final battle between the House of Lancaster and York sees the Prince of Wales, Edward of Westminster, who was the mad King Henry the Fourth's son. He was killed, and Henry VI's son, Edward the Fourth, becomes sort of undisputed king at that point. So
this is the end of the War of the Roses?
Yeah, or some people say the Wars of the Roses don't truly end until 1485 at the Battle of Bosworth Field, but a lot of people say it ended there. You could argue it ended there, because at least the House of Lancaster was finally defeated at Tewkesbury.
Gotcha.
So it's just a really, really big pivotal battle for English history. Is the Battle of Tewkesbury. And if you want to hear about it in long-form detail by yours truly, that is Behind the Paywall for £5 a month. Okay, on this day in 1493, Spanish Pope Alexander VI decrees in the papal bull Inter Caetera. Is that how you pronounce it? You know Latin.
Close enough. Inter Caetera.
You actually got Latin. I've got very, very minimal Latin.
Yeah.
I had to do 1 year of it at undergrad and did it very, very poorly. But you've actually got some Latin.
I did six years of it.
Okay, well, there you go. He decrees that all lands west of a line 100 leagues west of any of the islands of the Azores or the Cape Verde Islands belong to Castile, Spain, ultimately dividing the Americas between Spain and Portugal. Or quite often it's called the Treaty of Tordesillas.
Mm-hmm.
So where the Pope he thought he was drawing a line right down the middle of the Atlantic. Turns out a big chunk of Brazil sticks out.
And the rest was, So we talk about Latin America. because it's mostly Spanish speaking, and then Brazil is Portuguese speaking.
Yeah.
Right.
It's because of that.
It's because of this.
The Pope thought that he was granting more or less everything to Spain. Turns out a massive chunk of Brazil wasn't included in that, and Portugal said, okay, we'll colonize there then.
Yeah.
So why they speak Brazilian Portuguese to this day there. And of course, the rest of Europe, all the big players, Holland, the Dutch, the British, the French, were like, we're going to ignore that anyway. Well, yeah, you're saying we can't sail across the Atlantic? Nonsense. We're going through anyway.
Right.
Okay, on this day in 1814, King Ferdinand VII of Spain signs the decree of the 4th of May, returning Spain to absolutism. So that was after the Napoleonic era. There's a thing of... do you know the Napoleonic era at all or very well?
I'm pretty weak on it.
In 1808, there's a thing, the abdications of Bayonne, is basically where Napoleon lured the King of Spain and his heir to have a treaty and then just arrested them.
Mm-hmm.
Took them to France. He said, the monarchy of Spain is just over now.
Mm-hmm.
It's mine. In fact, I'm putting my brother on the throne. So that was in 1808. And by 1814, the Duke of Wellington, Sir Arthur Wellesley, had booted the French entirely out of Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And so they brought the monarchy back. And that's what that is there. Okay, on this day in 1904, the United States begins construction of the Panama Canal. What are your thoughts and feelings about Teddy Roosevelt and the Panama Canal issue? What did most Americans think about it? Are they even aware of it? Is it too long ago now?
We know that it's important because North America and South America, if not for the Panama Canal, create a huge barrier between one side of the world and the other, right?
Right, yeah.
A huge land barrier.
Sure.
And so the Panama Canal lets you get ships through. So we know it's important for commerce. Who controls the Panama Canal? You know, it got shifted under Reagan. They like gave it to the government of Panama.
Yeah, well, Reagan took it back, didn't he?
Did he? No,
after,
I thought it went the other way.
After Noriega...
Noriega, but that was later.
Okay, you're talking earlier than that.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I'm wondering...
By the way, one of my most amusing. You know, there's always the Hitler of the day, you know, the guy who gets called Hitler, right? Noriega was briefly the Hitler.
Oh, right, yeah.
I like
yeah.
bringing that up.
Yeah, he's like, the most evil man
like
of all
days,
time.
He, you know, Noriega's going to like take the world over, which was absurd.
Yeah. Right?
I mean,
yeah.
look at Panama on the map.
Yeah. He's the most evil man of all time. He must be stopped at any cost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Silly.
No, I wonder if, like, Teddy Roosevelt in the turn of the 20th century, where it was sort of, it was basically sort of an imperial project to just take, well, he, in fact, said, a famous quote, I took Panama.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of in an imperial sense.
Yeah.
I wonder if Americans are just sort of generally, if they know of it at all, whether they're sort of proud of that and it's like, yeah, cool. Like, or they're like, oh, that's a bit, that is a bit,
it's
bad
pretty.
Done that.
I'm very aware. I did a whole series on my channel called The Road to Empire, where I led up to 1898, the Spanish-American War.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you first have concentration camps run by the U.S. government in the Philippines, and all kinds of bad things, and taking foreign colonies like the Philippines. Mm. Right.
Well, Spanish rule just collapsed.
Well, with a little help from the U.S. Yes. and the U.S. started having foreign territories under its control.
Yeah.
And there were a lot
Hawaii,
of
all sorts of things.
There were a lot of Americans, and I'm sort of ideologically descended from them, who started like the Anti-Imperialist League, Mark Twain, people like this, who opposed it at the time.
Mm.
And they said, this is not what America was supposed to be about. We left an empire. We just wanted to be an independent country and do our thing. You guys have some big project for some reason that doesn't even make sense to us. So there, and I would say that, as you can see now, that impulse, that anti-imperialist impulse, has always been strong.
Right. But again, to play devil's advocate, there is the argument of, like, it's difficult not to do these things. For example, the Spanish-American War, seeing Spain's remaining overseas territories collapsing, wasn't there a big movement in the Philippines wanting America to take them over, effectively?
I don't know. They always make it sound like we're coming to, because people want us to be there. And I'm skeptical.
Okay, fair enough. All right. And on this day in 1979, Margaret Thatcher becomes the first woman to be elected Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. Old Maggie there. So, ushering in, of course, the boom period of the 1980s. What do people think of Thatcher in the United States? Do they look back on her fondly? Or do they not even know who she is?
I don't think most Americans would know that much about Thatcher, except they would associate her with Reagan.
Right. And that they were buddies, that they saw eye to eye on a lot of things.
Yeah, that they were largely collaborative, right?
Okay. Yeah. All right, then. Well, let's do our Rumble Rants and Super Chats for a few minutes, and then we'll close out the show. So the first Rumble Rant we've got, who do you think it is? It's only Mr. Global Church History.
Oh. Okay.
It always is. He says something here, which is too obscure for me. I don't really know anything about it, but I'll read it out anyway. He says, on this day in 1113, the year 1113 AD, you say, Buried Turkoman jihadists under Zahir al-Din Toghetkin of Damascus massacre the monks of Mount Tabor.
Mm.
I don't know about that, I'm afraid. I'm sorry. Most of the time, I would say 95% of the time, maybe, he'll say something. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I know that, and make a few points. But I don't know about that.
These would be Eastern Orthodox monks.
I forget
where Mount Tabor is, but it's to the east.
If it's in Damascus, near Damascus. And the other thing he said is that on this day, Jesus was left in Jerusalem as a 12-year-old boy.
Right.
And you say you know about that bit from the Gospels.
That's in the Gospels. His family accidentally leave him behind because they're part of a big, you know, group that's gone to Jerusalem for a high holy day. They leave him behind. They realize, oh, no, where's Jesus? They come back and he's debating with the Pharisees. As a 12-year-old.
He's meant to be, he's intelligent beyond knowing beyond his years.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of the point of it.
For the point of it, yeah, yeah.
Right, okay. Great. And for Tim Barber says, morning, all right? Yeah, I'm all right. You all right?
I'm all right.
Un-Brexit is a fantastic way to say exactly what they've done since minute one. Yeah.
Thank you.
Reform talk about new migrant centres shows they don't want to do the job that Restore do. Yeah, I don't believe that Reform are going to get the job done, i.e. deporting millions of people
right. That
should not be here. Millions must go. That's what we want, not just a few more migrant centres. It's just not good enough. Okay, we've got some YouTube super chats. There's about a dozen or so, roughly. Let's start reading them out. Joseph Blackhall says, "Hi, Bo. Love the show. Thank you. Do you like Cormac McCarthy? I just finished his Blood Mandarin." Blood Meridian, a semi-historical novel on the Glanton Gang's scalping campaign and the US-Mex border. Amazing read. I haven't read that. Have you read that?
I don't know Cormac McCarthy, but my good friend Christopher Sandbach is a huge Cormac McCarthy proponent, and he's one of the smartest literary guys I know. So, yes, if you want to read something good, give Cormac McCarthy a try. Highly recommended.
Was Cormac McCarthy, did he do The Road?
Yes, No Country for Old Men.
Right.
Yeah.
I've not read No Country for Old Men, but I've seen the film, liked it. Yeah. I have actually read The Road.
Oh, okay.
And seen the film. And it's good, but it's one of the most unremittingly dark novels I've ever read. There's like not a glimmer of hope or positivity at all.
Yeah.
At the end, you're thinking, oh, maybe the end of it, there'll be something. No, it's just horribly dark from start to finish. But it was well written. It was good. But I haven't read Blood Meridian, I'm afraid. Glanton Gangs.
I do not know about the Glanton Gangs.
Sorry.
That's interesting.
And not there was the ones that that Doc Holliday and Wyatt Earp fought.
Yeah.
It's not them. Weren't they the Clanton Gang? Well, anyway. All right. Thanks for that anyway, Joseph Blackhall. Wooten 19F says, "We cannot wait for the politicians to save us. Everyone is mixing every single day. By then, we won't be European anymore. Waiting and voting will condemn us all to extinction. We have to do it ourselves." A little bit of a Fed post.
I know.
A little bit of a Fed post.
But also, Let's say we wanted to run with it. I mean, what would you exactly do?
What do you want?
What is the plan? I'm open to ideas, but, you know.
What, Wooten, you're going to form a militia, are you? You're going to form a paramilitary, are you?
I mean, they're going to shut that down, right? I mean, what is a feasible plan is my point,
The next one is the same person. No political solution. Wake up. Well, you wake up. You do it first.
Yeah, great. Right?
Bro.
Show us how to do it,
Fed posting. All right. Mr. Gently Benevolent says,
"Friend of mine. Yeah.
Great to see you getting the Moon King on, Bo."
Yeah, so it's a joke I made on my channel years ago. I said I'm the self-declared king of the moon, and it's meant to lampoon the things the governments do, like the U.S. government that, I don't know if you know this, there's huge portions of the west of the United States that are controlled by, just owned by the federal government, and no one can build there, no one can do anything.
Like Teddy Roosevelt, some of those massive...
No, I don't mean like national parks. I don't mean national parks.
Oh, okay.
We all love the national parks.
There are millions of acres of those, but not that.
All this other land.
Okay.
That's just, there's states that are... The vast majority of the land in some of those states is owned by the federal government.
Right.
So it just, like I declare myself king of the moon, they just declare themselves to own all this territory that they've never done anything with.
Right.
In what sense do they own it? You know,
like massive chunks of Nevada and New Mexico and Arizona, places like that.
Yeah, if you look at a map of federal land ownership, the western part of the country is just...
When they say this giant chunk of Nevada, just you're not allowed to go there anymore. Don't worry about what we're doing there or not doing
there. Yeah, right.
Just we own it. So, okay. Next one is Wu-Tang again. Says it gives us another Fed post. All right. And Thundercook 2028 says, "We love the American Empire, actually." Right of reply.
I don't know who we is. Right. We Americans don't. How about that?
How about that? All right. Kick You in the Throat says America First.
That would be nice. It doesn't ever... We hear the words, but it doesn't ever actually happen.
Same person, Kick You in the Throat says Unite the Anglosphere.
Okay, I'll comment on that real quick, though. Okay, so I think that that what you see online with sort of Europeans versus Americans type shit-talking back and forth, I don't think that is authentic. Okay. I'm not saying there's no Americans that... feel that way, or no Brits that feel that way, but I just think that this is a psyop, particularly recently, having to do with the perception by the Zionists that Europe is not as on board as they'd like it to be with attacking Iran. I mean, Europe is allowing American planes to fly and base in Europe, right?
So yeah, they fly from RAF Fairford nearby. So
in practice, Europe is supporting the war, but they're not supporting the war as enthusiastically as the Zionists would like.
Right.
And so therefore they're fomenting this, you know, Twitter storm of anti-European comments and stuff.
Interesting.
I don't think most Americans think that way.
Right.
I'll just speak for myself. I certainly don't. I think that Europeans, looking at it globally, are really a small percentage of the population of the world, right?
Right.
And I think we better figure out how to stick together pretty darn quick.
That would be nice, yeah. Unite the Anglosphere, yes,
the people,
please.
The people, I mean.
Yeah. No, I like that sentiment. Just unite the Anglosphere, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and the last one, King Philip, 1861, says, how about Spam Fritters?
Never
tried completely,
it.
That's completely random.
Okay, but I'll share a random fact inspired by that. A friend of mine likes to go to Hawaii for vacation.
Okay.
And during World War II, you know, certain things came out of World War II because of rationing. Nutella is a World War II thing.
Right.
It was like a cheaper way to make chocolate by using hazelnuts, right? Well, with Hawaii, it was Spam. And Hawaii is like the spam capital of the world.
I did not know that. Really? I didn't know that.
50 flavors of Spam.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I did not know that.
They love Spam in Hawaii.
I thought it was a British thing. I guess not.
How many, do you have 50 flavors of Spam on the
show?
No, shelves?
It's one.
Yeah, well,
there's one.
Go to Hawaii. you'll learn.
Because anyone who might not know, Spam is just like a really, really, really processed type of meat you get in a tin.
Like a ham.
In a can. Yeah, it's like, yeah.
Pork.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's massively, massively processed. It's slop. It's slop meat.
Yeah.
And it's, but
it's kind of salty.
Yeah. But I like it. I grew up poor.
You like it?
I grew up poor as hell. And right. So we would sometimes have Spam.
Okay.
And sometimes we'd have chips, beans, and Spam for dinner.
I'm sorry. You would have Spam if you were lucky.
Right. Yeah. If we were lucky.
If you were lucky.
So I quite like Spam, but yeah. I know like some people think it's disgusting.
Mm.
Like, but I don't mind it. But Spam Fritters, I'd happily eat. Spam
Give it a try.
No problem. Yeah. All right. Well, that's the show. Thank you very much, Steve, for joining us. You will
Thanks
be on
me.
The podcast later, the main podcast today at 1,
I hear
at 1 p.m.
I will. Yeah. I'm here for the day to shoot things.
Right. So, yeah. And you're going to record something with Dan and maybe hopefully me as well for later for premium content as well.
Watch out for Radlib showing up on Lotus Eaters over the next week or two.
Yeah. We've got you all day. Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your thoughts and feelings and opinions and everything.
Yep.
Really, really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Okay, that is the show. You've been the glorious band, The Chosen Few, my band of brothers and sisters. Thank you for joining me. Try and make the best of the day ahead if you can. I know it's not always possible, but if you can, carpe diem, seize the day. Until tomorrow morning then, take care.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.